broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
And it is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch on this show, and we go places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't. And we ain't about to tell them how. You know, it's dog-eat-dog, baby. It's a dog-eat-dog world. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. That's right. This is the world of radio.
New York City, everybody's kicking each other's butts.
That's right. In the world of radio, we're up and down the dial, man. We are kicking the crap out of each other. So no mercy. No mercy at all. 877-876-PHIL is the number here. 877-876-7445. We're online at philhendryshow.com. philhendryshow.com. I wish I could tell you that we have a Twitter feed where you can, you know, stay up to date with the show as we tweet during the... We don't have time to tweet during the show. And none of my people are tweeting during the show. I don't allow anyone in my tribe to tweet during the show. We work here, okay? We're not tweeting. And I say that with all due respect. The fact is we don't have staff for that. However, you can visit us at twitter.com/realphilhendry. That's my personal tweetster account. And we got a whole bunch of other ones, so check them out. All right, and our affiliate spotlight tonight, KNEW San Francisco and KPRC in Houston. One of the great radio stations in the history of the planet Earth, KPRC Houston, Michael Berry and the gang there. Two great stations on the Phil Hendry Show radio network. If you're watching us on Phil TV and HD tonight, you see that I am once again wearing the Phil Hendry Show ball cap. This is going to be available very, very soon on our website. You can go to our merchandise shop and pick this one up. We've got an even better one coming. I don't want to give you any other detail. If you are looking at this on our website right now, you'll notice behind me is what we call DDR Roll. I am sitting here in front of the Nuremberg Rally of 1933. That's Adolf Hitler. All right.
Yay.
Thank you. Well, we like to be historical. We like to be educational. All right, now let's get serious. A couple of things tonight. We're going to be speaking with Vernon Dozier and Father James McCorders this evening about this time of year among high school athletes. This is particularly high school football players. This is the time of year that you perhaps have heard described as Hell Week. And what is Hell Week? Well, Hell Week is when they are in the highly concentrated portion of their training as football players, what they call two-a-days, and you're wearing full pads, and it's generally really, really hot out, and that's why they call it Hell Week. We're going to talk to Coach Dozier and the conflict that they're having with parents at their school and other coaches may be having as well. We're going to start off things here tonight, though, talking with Herman Whitaker. Mr. Whitaker is a retired firefighter, and for some 31 years was with a fire department in the Detroit, Michigan area. Mr. Whitaker is joining us to talk about Jerry Lewis. That's right. Jerry Lewis, you may know, is not going to be hosting this year's MDA Telethon. Now, this is generally held over the Labor Day weekend. And for as long as I can remember, this guy here, Phil Hendry, I remember Jerry Lewis, and I hate to sound like an old guy. I guess I am, but I remember Jerry Lewis being the host of the MDA Telethon since probably when I was 10 years old, and it probably goes back even further than that. Mr. Herman Whitaker joining us on the line from Detroit this evening. Sir, how are you?
Oh, I'm very good, Phil. I'm really grateful to have the opportunity to speak to you about this.
All right, and you were a firefighter for how long?
For 31 years with emergency services, and then I joined the for a very brief time a medevac service, ambulance service, and then I basically just retired. I'm working with Feed the Boot, and I've been with them for about 10 years.
Now, Feed the Boot is what?
Feed the Boot is a charity that we run from our organization, a group of retired firefighters, where we get putting money in the Feed the Boot to put money into MDA and to MDA research and assist in the muscular dystrophy telethon.
What is your feeling? And I understand that you have some, you pretty much endorse this. This is a forced retirement of Jerry Lewis, isn't it?
I think you were describing earlier, Phil, the Jerry Lewis had been approached by members of MDA and had been asked, was asked if he would give up the hosting of the telethon. And I think he might have balked. He might not have been entirely agreeable to that. And they had asked him to record a message passing along the baton, so to speak, of the hosting of this program to another individual, and I think he did not agree with that. And I'm sorry that he didn't, because I think that Jerry Lewis has done an amazing job hosting this, but he has not been the host of this thing during a period of time when they were able to find a cure for muscular dystrophy. And so, my way of thinking, it's time for another host, and I think we need to...
Well, when you say we need another, you need another host for the muscular dystrophy telethon, why is that? You're saying because they haven't found a cure?
They have not found a cure for muscular dystrophy during the time that Jerry Lewis was the host. They have not found a cure for muscular dystrophy during this entire period of time that he was raising money. And I'm not saying that Jerry Lewis is a doctor or a scientist. I'm not saying that Jerry Lewis is the person who goes into the research lab and is, you know, the individual who will find a cure for this. But it was under his fundraising capabilities that the muscular dystrophy telethon was kicked off, and they have not yet, all the money that he's raised, they haven't gotten a cure. And people start to want to see something different. They want to see another host.
But if he's not got anything to do, is it his age?
I don't want to say it's his age. I don't think it's his age. I think it's time that he... I can't say it's his age, because that would open the Muscular Dystrophy Association up to probably legal action.
Well, all right, so let's talk about Jerry Lewis. You said something, you repeated something you heard us say in our pre-show, and that was something that I heard, and I don't want to quote where I heard it, but it could be very much just be gossip, that Jerry Lewis was asked by MDA, would you please step down, and we want you to record a message, and Mr. Lewis declined because he did not want to record anything, but they didn't want to give him a live mic.
Well, and right there, I think, you know, it gives you an idea of the level of confidence that they have in Jerry Lewis, that they don't want to give this man a live microphone for fear that he's going to say something to embarrass MDA. So that's why they wanted him to record it.
And do you agree with that decision?
I can only say that members of Feed the Boot, we've raised a lot of money for the Muscular Dystrophy Association, and to this day, some 50 years after the fact, I don't see any... It just doesn't seem like they're anywhere close to finding a cure.
Well, all right, you're back on that theme again.
Yes, I'm back on the theme, Phil, because it's true.
All right, but he's not... Like you said, Jerry Lewis is not a doctor. He's not a research scientist. He's not a physician. He's not a... He's none of these things. He's not a man who is involved in that. So how can this be something that you would tie to him? Is it the perception?
Well, I think in many ways it is the perception, because Jerry Lewis, people will see Jerry Lewis on Labor Day weekend and think that here is this man that I've been giving money to for 50 years, and there's still no cure for this disease. I'm sick and tired of giving money to him. I'm not blaming him. You're not blaming him. I don't think anybody should, but it's perception.
And so people are perceiving that they're giving money to the guy that's not finding a cure. All right.
It is perception. And it is the reason why we've got to get Jerry Lewis out of there, and we've got to get someone in that people will think can put a positive face on the efforts to find a cure for this disease. And I think that we need a black man. I think that we need a...
No, whoa, hold on for just a minute. When you say you need a black man, why do you say that?
There's no reason. We've looked at Jerry Lewis for a great many years, and I think now what I think people will want to see is perhaps an African American. And the reason why is it has nothing to do with race. It has to do with just the diversity of what you're seeing and what you're giving your money to and what you have confidence in. We have a black president. The country is used to seeing a black individual in a position of authority, and to the extent that the country is in a position of looking at someone who is an African-American, a position of authority, and I don't want to make a joke, but an African-American who is asking for money.
All right, you're bordering on racism here.
No, I mean in tax money.
All right, but you're still bordering on racism.
No, sir, we're not. I'm a longtime supporter of MDA. I would never, ever, ever. No, I think you'll find that people listening right now, they understand what I'm saying.
All right, we're talking to Herman Whitaker with Feed the Boot, which is a group of firefighters raising money for MDA. Retired, right?
I'm sorry?
Are you? You're, this is a whole group of retired fire.
Yes, yeah, that's right, Phil. We're all retired. Retired from different emergency fire stations and so forth.
All right, our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. So do you have in mind an African-American host for the MDA telethon?
Well, I think someone that people will have a level of confidence in, someone who has participated in other charity work, someone that people will see and say, this is an individual that I would trust because he's an individual that I trust, and I think there's a number of them. We have to have someone that young people will like. The young man that was on the Video Music Awards the other night, Chris Brown, who has been through so much.
Chris Brown? Good God. You know.
What do you mean, good? What do you mean, good God?
Good. This guy's been accused of assaulting a woman. He's got there's a lot of controversy attached to this guy.
Yes, but he's also a man that's come through that. And he also did quite an act the other night, flying to the air and so on.
All right, hold on for a minute. Herman Whitaker with us, Chris Brown. Mr. Whitaker is with the Feed the Boot, which is a group of firefighters who believe that it is, quite frankly, it is time to get rid of Jerry Lewis, which is what they're doing, and hire a new host who he thinks should be an African-American. And because it's just time to show a little diversity there. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. In my opinion, Mr. Lewis was given a sort of a, he was given the run a little bit, and I'm not exactly sure why. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. We'll be back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
We can't fight this fight alone. Give us a call, 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
Candy bar.
Call the Patriot Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
Welcome back here, Phil Henry, with Herman Whitaker from Feed the Boot on the retirement of Jerry Lewis, the forced retirement of Jerry Lewis is what it is, and the search for, who is going to host this?
I don't know who's going to host right now, Phil. It could be that they're still in discussions with people. We do need a long-term host. And
so Jerry Lewis, a guy who had hosted this for the longest time, is no longer the host because they never found a cure.
They never found a cure. And the other thing that I don't want people to misunderstand what I'm going to say. But Jerry Lewis did a great many comedies that made fun of people who had a kind of muscular dystrophy problem. He walked in a spastic manner. He talked as if he had brain damage.
Are you saying that Mr. Lewis...
If you'll just pardon me, Mr. Henry, there are a couple of things I wanted to say. I'm not saying to anticipate you. I'm not saying he did it on purpose. I think he found it amusing to walk and talk like someone that had muscular dystrophy. And I think hosting Muscular Dystrophy's telethon was his way of saying, would you please allow me to do this kind of comedy, and in return, I'll raise money for the very people that I go home and laugh myself sick over.
And do you really think that that's his attitude?
I don't know, but I resent it.
And so you personally resent Jerry Lewis's comedy because you felt it was one big, long, broad assault on people with muscular dystrophy, and it sounds to me like just a cop-out, you know?
No, sir, it is not.
No, it sounds like an enormous cop-out. You treated the man poorly. You gave him the bum rush off the show, and you're coming up with some horse dung reason about how his comedy...
No, sir, Mr. Henry, I was a firefighter for a long time. I was in burning buildings saving lives. What were you doing? You were a little boy watching this man on TV pretending he had a brain lesion and laughing at it.
And I beg your pardon? No, I was not.
Did you go to his movies?
I saw it. When I was a kid, I saw his movies, yeah.
Did you find them funny?
I'm not going to answer your questions now because I understand where they're leading, and it's essentially you trying...
No, well, I'm trying to get you to speak the truth, which is that as a little boy, you sat and you watched Jerry Lewis making fun of people with muscular dystrophy, with a spastic... who are spaz... You've seen spazzes.
And yeah, and I don't call them spazzes either, sir.
You've seen people with this problem.
Yes, I have, and I tell you, I think I'm a little more sensitive than you are, and I think that Mr. Lewis, in his way, as a comic, did what a lot of comics did from his generation. They saw the world around them, and they laughed at it, however insensitive it might appear today. I'm going to take a phone call here in Woodward, Oklahoma. Linda, hi, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Herman Whitaker. Go ahead, please.
Oh, I'm outraged. I can't believe that they're holding Jerry Lewis responsible for not being able to cure an incurable disease. I mean, who are we going to hold responsible for not curing cancer?
Well, ma'am, if you say it's incurable, ma'am, if you're saying it's incurable, then why are they having a telephone? I'm hoping
hopefully there will be a cure one day, but you can't hold Jerry Lewis responsible for not finding that cure in the last 50 years he's hosted this. And you know, you make fun of his comedy and say he's making fun of these people. He's not making fun of them. He is a physical comedian. I mean, I laugh at lots of physical comedy.
Do you think it's funny to look at someone who's a spaz and laugh at them?
You know, when you use that word spaz.
I've been a nurse for 20 years. I have worked with all kinds of people, all kinds of patients. And no, I don't think anything about any kind of physical illness, no matter what. No, I don't say spaz. You said that.
Yes, sir. I think that's a very insensitive word to use, Mr. Whitaker, when you say you're claiming that you want to get Jerry Lewis out of there because he's insensitive.
If I'm using a word that I shouldn't, I apologize. But Jerry Lewis, for 50 years in his and more in his comedy, has laughed, made us laugh. He's made me laugh at people who walk like they're
and
retarded.
How much money has he raised for MD by his comedy?
Exactly. You know, and his hosting.
Yeah, I mean, how many times did other comedians fall on tables, you know, and break them just because they were fat? You know, they weren't doing
well,
that for fat people. They were using that.
Yes, ma'am, but here's the bottom line. Jerry Lewis has raised an enormous amount of money, and I think for him, and this is what I think this gets to the crux, Phil, of why Jerry Lewis has been asked not to be on the show. I think for Jerry Lewis, it's an elaborate joke to raise money for a disease that he thinks is funny.
Wow, I'm really sorry you feel
oh,
that way.
Boy.
I am so
you know
sorry
something.
How shallow you are. Just that is incredibly lame.
Well, why would he year in and year out raise this money?
I haven't seen Jerry Lewis on any
exactly.
in the last 20 years falling
well,
down
when you,
and tripping. And making
he,
fun
no,
of
no,
people?
But, oh, but you know how he talks. Hey, lady. He does it in that fashion. And
No. Let's you know something.
To do with, indeed, that's just a funny voice.
Well, man, he's making fun of people that are asexual, who have an inability to have sex or who have an inability to relate. When he says, hey, lady, he's talking about a man that couldn't possibly have sexual relations with a woman if he was gold-plated. And to say that Jerry Lewis is helping to... There's been no cure.
Why is he held responsible for the fact that there's no cure?
Because, Mr. Henry, he has been the face of the MDA effort at curing this disease, or as this young lady said, fighting treatment. He has been at the forefront, and for 50 to 60 years with Jerry Lewis at the forefront, we still see people going across crosswalks with the right leg over the left. This is very emotional.
That's
for me.
Unreal. It is for me too. I just cannot believe you really feel that way. But
I
are you crying?
Yes, I am.
After saying what you just said, that we have people going across crosswalks with one leg going over the other, do you think this is funny?
In what sense do you think I think it's funny?
One leg going over the other, and what else were you going to say? All right, listen, Linda, thank you very much for your call. Our number is 877-877-Phil, 877-876-7445. We're talking to Herman Whitaker, a man who raised money for Feed the Boot, which is sort of an allied or a ancillary, I should say, not ancillary, an ancillary effort at raising money for muscular, the cure for muscular dystrophy, the Muscular Dystrophy Association. Jerry Lewis is no longer on this telethon. Many people, including myself, feel he was treated very rudely. Given this bum's rush off the show, Mr. Whitaker represents the side that says Mr. Lewis should go. They haven't found a cure. 877-876-PHIL. What do you think? We'll be back to world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
Oh, boy.
Call the Patriot Hotline now. 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and we're on every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch. And through the looking glass, baby, going places other talk shows wish they could, but they cannot. Now, you go to our website, philhendryshow.com, and you get a backstage pass before I get, you know, a little put out with you. You get the backstage pass, you're going to have your podcast, your classic podcast. Every day you've got the video cast. Every night you've got the video cast. Every day, every night, you got our news feed. You have all of our archive material. It goes back hundreds and hundreds of hours, thousands of hours, larger than any other radio show in the history of the world. Go there, do, and check it out, philhendryshow.com. Herman Whitaker is still with us here as we talk about Jerry Lewis and the fact that Mr. Lewis is no longer on the telethon. You said something, sir, that was... that continues to blame Jerry Lewis for there being no cure for muscular dystrophy, and you've not addressed the concerns everybody's had that this is not a man who is a scientist.
No, he's not a scientist, Phil. But here is the reason why Jerry Lewis is, in my way of thinking, responsible for so much of why muscular dystrophy and the efforts of curing muscular dystrophy continue to be slow and sluggish. Jerry Lewis got me and other people, yourself and other generations of people, to think that an individual who had a muscular dystrophy-like disease was funny.
And Jerry Lewis didn't get any such... I've got great sensitivity...
Allow me to finish, please, if you'll just allow me to finish.
But if I've got great sensitivity for people who are suffering from that illness, regardless of how much I've seen of Jerry Lewis...
And that is an admirable statement that you're making. I wonder if we know how true these things are when we really sit down with ourselves and there's no one around and we're very honest with ourselves. Because Jerry Lewis made me the man that I am, a man that hungers for that kind of comedy. And while I'm raising money for muscular dystrophy awareness and while I'm raising money to help people who have these problems... Jerry Lewis forced me to thirst for a sketch or a skit where he walks with his knees banging together, his teeth are crooked, his hair is askew, he's walking with one shoulder lower than the other, almost like an ape, and I thirst for that. I want that in my life. And I feel that way even as I'm collecting money to cure an illness that would, God help me for saying this, that would give me more of that. If...
And so you would have more of that kind of comedy if muscular dystrophy wasn't cured, but you blame Jerry Lewis for it not being cured. And this is the reason why we're having the discussion we're having tonight, because there is a very definite disconnect going on here from what you're saying and what you're doing. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. Jerry Lewis thrown off of the MDA, and I say thrown off the MDA telethon, I mean every bit of that, thrown off, offered to record, they offered him the opportunity to record a goodbye, and he said, I'd like to do it live, and they didn't trust this man enough to give him a live microphone. 877-876-PHIL. Here is, let me see this, in Richmond we have Curtis. Hey, Curtis, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Herman Whitaker. Go ahead, please.
Okay. First of all, Jerry Lewis was a fan of mine, and I've been watching him. I'm 68 myself. I've been watching him when he was with Dean Martin. And to say that Jerry Lewis was making fun of people with muscular dystrophy, are you kidding me? There's no way he was doing that. And also, as you age, certain things happen. It will happen to Phil. It happened to you, sir. It will happen to me. I'm 68 right now. And also, to put a black man on the show, and I'm African-American myself, it makes no
yes,
sense.
Sir.
And then you mentioned Phil, and then you mentioned Joe. What's his name? Joe? I forgot his name. I like his singing. But you mentioned...
Chris. We wanted to have Chris Brown.
Chris Brown, I'm sorry. Hosted. Chris Brown.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
You mentioned him. Why him? Not because he has an assault charge against him. Even in the African American community, they put a blacklist to him too.
Can I explain, sir? Can I explain to you why Chris Brown? Because first of all, I think the young man has made a comeback from those charges. The other night on the Video Music Awards. Did you see the? He flew through the air almost like Mary Martin and Peter Pan. Now I know it was a VMA, but he was flying around, and it had the same quality of a Mary Martin and Peter Pan.
But
the other idea, yes.
Mary Martin and Peter.
Yeah, but let me quickly say to you, it's obvious that Jerry Lewis is kicked off the show because of age. Now he would never.
Yeah.
I don't care if his knees were knocking together, if his walk was a slump. That's because of age. It's not because he's making fun of people with muscular dystrophy. Why would you even
the
say
characters that he plays, sir? I think you'd agree the characters that he played in his movies, and you've been a longtime fan of his, as I have been. But when you look at him walking with his knees banging together, yes, sir.
But that's in a movie. If his knees are banging together right now, it's because of age. It's not because
he's making fun. Well, we're looking for a cure for muscular dystrophy. What has he done? He's raised a lot of money, but it hasn't gotten us any closer. And, of course, I want to know.
But like Phil said, it's not his fault. He's not a scientist. He doesn't go into labs and do research. Hello?
Yes, sir, I'm here. I'm taking in what you're saying, but you're not listening to what I'm saying. What I'm saying is simply this. All of those films that you saw Jerry Lewis in,
yes.
All right, let me interrupt here. You're talking about, I love The Disorderly Orderly. I loved Cinderfella.
All of those movies, Phil. All of those where he walks around, bang, you know, like, hey, lady. In other words, he was making fun of people. Of course, but you loved it, and I loved it. And I find now, Curtis, in my life, as in yours, we thirst for comedy where someone is spastic and bumping into something. Jerry Lewis did that to me.
No, wait a minute. That's the most jackass thing I've ever heard in my life.
It's the
Jerry
most
Lewis
thing I've heard.
Are you telling me that you didn't like Jerry Lewis? Of course you
did. No, I did.
All right. Well, but don't you hunger for that kind of humor to see a spaz? I shouldn't use that word.
Don't use that word, please.
All right, but...
Ben, what do you mean we hunger to see that kind of humor?
Because we were given an entire generation of it. And Curtis would agree with me. There's nothing funnier in the world than Jerry Lewis walking with his toes pointing at each other and, you know, like a guy that's had was born with some kind of a tumor.
But that was in a movie. He wasn't doing that to make fun of people with muscular dystrophy.
Well, then why was he doing it? People walk that way normally? I don't think so.
No,
look at, sir, you're drawing a...
Dean Martin made fun of alcoholics. Just like Dean Martin made fun of drug addicts and alcoholics.
Yeah. Okay.
How did he do that? Well, how did he make fun of drugs? Listen, Curtis, thank you very much, sir, for your call. 877-876-PHIL. How did he do that?
Who are you talking about now? Are you talking about Dean Martin?
Dean Martin, yeah.
By acting like a drunk.
Well, you said drug addicts.
Well, all right, but you know what I'm saying.
You're talking about people with a substance abuse problem. That, you know, are we not engaged in a very futile conversation here as we talk about what one generation found funny as opposed to another? Here is Lackey in New Bern, North Carolina. Go ahead, Lackey, go ahead. Hi, go ahead, sir. You're on the air.
Are you talking to me?
Yes, ma'am. You need to turn your radio down, too.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, yes.
You called her a sir. It's a lady.
I know.
Do you want me to speak now?
Yes, go right ahead.
Okay.
Are you a female or are you a female or a male?
Will you let me talk to the caller? Go ahead, Lackey.
I'm a great grandmother, sir. I'm a female.
Yeah, okay. Yes,
this
okay.
This gentleman has a warped mind, trying to turn people's minds against what Jerry Lewis has done. Jerry Lewis is a comedian, and I don't believe in no way that he has meant to offend anyone with muscular dystrophy. The money he has raised has helped people in many ways, maybe to get them help, to come into their home, to help them do things. Muscular dystrophy people are very educated. They're very smart. They're very talented. And,
but they walk funny. Wouldn't you agree that they also walk funny?
Why do you have to say that?
Sir, you are being ugly. Look, I have
a
niece that has had polio, okay? And one of her legs is slightly shorter than the other one. She is 67 years old, and she's just getting over cancer of her brain, okay? Okay, and
that's a double whammy, isn't it?
In her later life, she has what you call polio syndrome. Okay, different.
Does she have polio of the brain? You're saying polio in the brain?
I am offended by this man's attitude, and I am going to pray for him. I'm going to pray for him.
Ma'am, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to offend you.
Bad attitude.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to offend you. I wanted to ask you, what black host would you rather see on the MDA telephone than Jerry Lewis?
Well, sir, you know what? I don't care if you have a black host, a Mexican host, a white host. It has to be somebody that is a decent person. Everybody is a sinner, born into sin, and they make mistakes in their lifetime. And all they have to do is go to God and say, Lord, will you please forgive me? All you got to do is say two or three words, and God is automatically going to forgive you of your sin.
Will you pray with me right now?
Okay.
Will you pray with me right now? Will you pray with me right now?
Okay. We all are.
Would you please...
And I'm sorry.
Keep me from thirsting for the kind of humor that has muscular dystrophy written all over it. I don't want to laugh at that. I want to be a good man. I'm hoping that Steve Harvey will be the new host.
What kind of a prayer is that?
Get a load of you telling me how to pray.
Sir,
Did you hear him?
You know what? I am 100% filled with the Holy Spirit.
Oh!
And you do not say anything against the Holy Spirit. You will never be forgiven, okay?
No, I would never do that.
About the Holy Bible, God is a God of love, okay?
Can you spell his name?
Love. Do you love your wife? Do you have children? Do you have children, sir?
I don't love my wife, but I have children.
A beautiful little boy or a little girl? Okay.
In what manner are you speaking?
Shame on you, sir.
Oh, God.
Shame on you.
What do you mean? What?
She said, if I ever had a little boy, what did she mean?
But you have a son.
A boy or a little girl? What if one of them
in what sense?
For a dystrophy?
Listen,
would you
to
be
you.
Talking like that now, sir? Okay.
No, ma'am, I would not. But I would say this. I would say, look at how that little girl is walking. I saw that in a Jerry Lewis movie. I don't blame myself for that. I blame Jerry Lewis for that.
All right. You know, the lady said the words. She said it very right. You're ugly. You're very ugly. And we're going to take a break. Go ahead, Lackey. We're going to take a break here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Our number, 877-876-PHIL.
Why break now? She stopped talking.
Would you shut up, please? 877-876-PHIL. We'll be right back on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. We also have Vernon Dozier and Father James Recorders coming up next hour.
Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Henry Show. Call the Patriot Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
And welcome back on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. On the line with me is Herman Whitaker, Mr. Whitaker, with a group of retired firefighters, and they have a charity called Feed the Boot. This is a charity in which they assist in the fundraising for the Muscular Dystrophy Association. And the MDA Association, as you know, has been so closely allied with Jerry Lewis and Jerry Lewis allied with them. And the fact that he's not going to be on the MDA telethon, I suppose, you know, all things come to an end. I think we should be fair about that, Mr. Whitaker, and I understand what you're saying. But when you say to me that that Jerry Lewis...
Well, I'm happy to have you. I'm glad that you admitted that. You know.
Right, but when you say to me that Jerry Lewis made you thirst for the kind of humor that makes fun of people with muscular dystrophy, you're way out there, you know?
I'm way out there. What does it mean that I'm way out there? I've asked that, and I agree that Jerry Lewis should have taped a goodbye.
Why would you insult that man to the point of we don't want to give him a live mic? Why insult the man at all? Why not let the man continue? You know, we live in a day and age now, man. We can't wait to get rid of people. It's a disgrace. It's a disgrace. I just heard the Dodgers.
Hi, Mr. Henry, you told me about that before the program, about the Dodgers and Vin Scully.
All right, but you understand what I'm saying. Let's go to another call. Mavis, you're on the Phil Henry Show, Mavis in Southgate. Go ahead.
Yeah, Phil, I'm listening to this man here. Talking about having black hosts.
Yes, ma'am.
And if Jerry Lewis cannot be on the show, and I've loved him, and I think this band is a disgrace. I think you're a disgrace.
Well, I'm sorry that you're thinking
that way. But I am thinking that way. I have never heard anyone speak of these poor, unfortunate people the way that you have. But I'd love to hear. If you are saying Jerry Lewis must go off of the TV show, the MDA, then I had hoped that we'd get Denzel Washington. Cause I love him so much, you know.
You're saying, do they want it? You want to have Denzel Washington?
If they got rid of Mr. Lewis, yeah.
I think that's a very good idea, Phil. I would very much, you know, concur.
I do not want them to move the man, Jerry Lewis, off. I know he's a Jew. I have no problem with the Jew.
Well, that was the other thing. A great many of our African-American viewers don't like Jews.
Why would you feed into that?
That doesn't make any matter to me.
Why would you feed into that? That is the most ignorant. I'm getting sick and tired of this stuff, you know?
I didn't make this world, Phil. I didn't make the world, and...
No, God made this world. God made it. Don't think you made the world. You have made nothing but this world a bad place the last half hour listening to you.
Well, ma'am, I wasn't the one that brought...
You have... God made the world. God in all his glory made this world. You are nothing. You are a mistake God made. If you want to move Jerry Lewis out, not because he's a Jew, I have nothing against a Jew. Never have.
All right, that makes one of you.
What does that mean, that makes one of you? You know something... You have talked about the guy, we need a black guy. This guy's a Jew. He makes fun of people with MD. You have done nothing but run that man down. If it wasn't for Jerry Lewis, nobody'd know what muscular dystrophy was. No one would even know anybody had that disease. You understand that?
Mr. Henry, you said it right. That is exactly right.
Mr. Henry, I think that is entirely false. And
Why don't you keep still for a minute and let me finish what I say, because I wanted to have Denzel Washington.
I would love to have Denzel Washington.
Yeah, but I don't want to see a man suffer because of that. I would love to have Denzel Washington come on muscular dystrophy telephone, or another black man would be Johnny Depp.
Johnny Depp is not black, dear.
Johnny Depp would be an African American.
She didn't hear you.
Johnny Depp is not black.
Johnny Depp is not black. I saw Johnny Depp the movie. Well, yes, he is. He is black. Damn, you better believe he's black. You better believe Johnny Depp is black.
No, he's not black.
Why don't you let me handle this, Herman, okay? Mavis?
And the other movie that I saw him in was Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah. Oh, Mavis, let me ask you something, honey. Johnny Depp is not black. Have you seen him?
I saw Johnny Depp in the Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah. All right, you saw him in Pirates of the Caribbean. He's not black.
Johnny Depp is black. You wish he was white. That's what your problem is. You wish he was white. Johnny Depp has been a black man in my mind and my heart for so long. If they'd have Denzel...
No, he's not, but, you know...
Well, let's say that Johnny Depp... Is he your first choice, Mavis, for the MDA?
You know, I'm not talking to you at all. I'm not talking to filth like you at all. I'm not talking to filth like... You know what you are? You're filth. You understand that?
Madam, I...
Don't you keep your mouth shut. I want to see Denzel on that show. I want Johnny Depp on that show. I'm in love with have Chris Rock on that show. I want to have, you know who would be great? Chris Tucker.
Really?
Don't you laugh.
I think what you've done is you've made a mockery.
You have made a mockery out of this.
All right, look, at Mavis, we've taken your point of view and your votes down. If you want of black hosts for MDA, you want...
I want Chris Rock, I want Chris Tucker, I want Denzel and Johnny Depp. Dude, I've seen all Pirates of the Caribbean, and I want to... And I heard you talk, Mr. Henry. First of all, I want to say I love your show so much.
Thank you, dear, very much.
I love you so much. You give me so much joy. I want you to shut the filth that comes out of your sewer. Shut the filth that come out of your sewer.
Adam, I've never been spoken to that way.
Shut your filth. You shut that beer drain. You understand me?
Yes, I understand.
Shut the filth out of your sewer. I'm talking to Mr. Henry. Mr. Henry.
Now we have to go, okay?
I love you so much. I listen to your program every night. You make me happy. And I'd love to see Johnny Depp. I'd love to see Chris Tucker.
All right, we have to go. Coming up next is Vernon Dozier and Father James McCorder.
And Johnny Depp, who I did see on Pirates of the Caribbean. Chris Tucker be great, too.
Phil Hendry.
But Johnny Depp's my favorite black man.
From the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
World famous Phil Hendry show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And welcome to our broadcast as usual this evening. We are here with you each and every Monday through Friday. If you're in the, if either you're in the L.A. area or you are online with us here for our video casts, you can listen to our Saturday night show as well, which originates here locally for our local affiliate here in Los Angeles. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, and our website is philhenryshow.com. Those of you who are watching the show on Phil TV and HD, then you could obviously see what's up there. And we're broadcasting the show, as usual, in our full, gorgeous, high definition. Although camera two here has that fuzzy stuff, man. I don't know what that is, Robert.
I don't know. I got Elaine coming over to look at it.
Elaine's coming over. Okay, good. Joining us this hour is Vernon Dozier from the Board of Administration at Belmar Academy. We're also going to have with us on the line Father James McCorders as we talk about this school year coming up. And not only the school year that's coming up, but we're also talking a little bit about athletics, and specifically football. And Coach Dozier is the head football coach at Belmar Academy. So he's a man that is obviously very, very... interested in how those things are going. And you, Coach, I'm going to bring you on. It's nice to have you with us this evening, and I understand you're at a parent-teacher. Is it a mixer, or what is it?
It's not a mixer, Phil. It's more a meet-and-greet for the new parents of our freshman class coming in. We have four grades here at Belmar Academy. Most Catholic high schools do, and we have our freshman, sophomore, junior and senior, and this is a mixer, and not a mixer, but it's a meet and greet. When you say mixer, I guess I think of
well, there's no cocktails being served.
No, what we have are just some soft drinks and some coffee, and we're saying hello and meeting all these parents.
All right, and you are in the middle of Hell Week, and describe for us as a football coach what Hell Week is.
All right, Hell Week is for our players on our junior varsity and varsity teams, and it is essentially a week in which we work them out two times a day. We go through full offensive and defensive drills with all of the special teams involved. We have our individual units break out and go through their drills, meaning our quarterbacks, running backs, our receivers, our offensive line, our defensive line, and so forth. We have these drills twice a day, and we do them in full pads. That means in full gear. And it's hot. it generally is in the summertime, and this is why it's called Hell Week, and it wasn't something I invented, but...
No, the Hell Week has been around for as long as there's been high school football and college football, for that matter. It's a tradition, but I interrupted you. So
it's that. It's also seeing how mentally tough they are, and that can happen in a lot of different ways. You can test a young man his stamina just by as I mentioned to you once before. You know, we will have on the sideline perhaps a big bucket of Gatorade and iced water and iced down soft drinks. Myself, one of the coaches, will be drinking out of a Gatorade bottle and looking at them and, you know, trying to test them mentally. But the biggest part of Hell Week, Phil, is the mental part, and that's where we try to really either break down a player or we try to see is he tough enough to take it. And during the entire time that we are working out during Hell Week, during the entire time that we are going through these drills, during the entire week, I will be talking to the players individually, or I will talk to them in units, and I will be challenging them mentally.
Give me an example of what you do. When you say challenging them mentally, what do you mean?
Well, it's something very simple. What I do, for every coach it's different, but for me, I will walk up to a group of, JVs who are, our running backs, or maybe there are receivers, and I'll say, gentlemen, this is Hell Week, and this is where you either make a team or you don't make the team. I said, this is the time where either you are a part of a winning football tradition that goes back some 25 to 30 years, or you go home to your mama, or you go home to your daddy. So what's it going to be? And I will continue this. I'll go to the quarterbacks. This is a part of a – we've had some great quarterbacks come through here. Jesus Williams was our starting quarterback. He went on and played pro football in Canada, played for 10 years in Canada. We've had guys go to the NFL, tight ends. Juan Francis was another one that went to the New England Patriots. I can name right off the top of my head a half dozen players that went on to professional football careers. So I will tell my players that, and I'll say, this is a serious football program. Now, either you get with it or you go home to your mama. You go home. And
all right. Now, have you gotten into it with some parents?
I wouldn't say I've gotten into it, but...
But you've gotten calls from parents who are not... They don't like the... They don't like the rough treatment, do they?
Well, they think that the kids are going to be somehow damaged. They're not going to be damaged, Phil. We've had enough examples of young people. We've had enough examples of football players that have died. And
I was going to say, professional players.
At all levels, we've had enough examples of players that have died during the summer heat. To certainly keep our eye on these kids, make sure that they're hydrated. But you've got to test them too. You've got to make sure that physically they're in shape, and you got to make sure that mentally they're in shape. And at the height of the heat, at the height of their thirst, at the height of their fatigue, you walk over to them and you say, "Do you want to go home to your mama? Huh? You want to go home to mommy? How many of you guys want to go home to mommy?" And I'll say it just like that. I will get them all together at the end of the first day. After we've done our second set of drills, second set of practices, and I'll say, how many of you want to go home to your mama? Is there anybody here that wants to go home to mommy? Is there anybody that wants to go home? And
all right, I understand what you're saying. Now, I've got a couple of. I told you I was going to bring up a couple of the examples here that were given to me by Headmaster Schramm.
Yes, sir.
Okay, he said that he got calls from one mother who said that you told one of the players, "Do you want to go home and blank blank your mother's breast?"
Yes, sir. I said that. Yes.
You okay? She found that a little offensive.
Well, no, it's not a look, Phil. What's offensive? I'm not talking about sex. I'm talking about.
Well, did you say? Did you? Well, all right. What did you say?
Let me tell you what I said, okay? Before you've got one of these parents that's going to make something up and try to run me out of town on a rail, which is what they've been trying to do for 30 years.
And they're trying to run you out of town, RL, even though you've had a winning football program every single year.
We have had winning teams every single year of my 26 years as a head coach, except for 2 years. And those are the 2 years that I was put on suspension for the very things that you and I are talking about. When I was suspended for those 2 years, our football program went to hell in a handcart. Okay? So I'm not talking about something that I don't know anything about. And I said to this young man, who is a part of our quarterback squad, a kid by the name of Dallas Armstrong, and I said, young man, do you want to go home and get in your mama's lap and just go ahead and get some mother's milk going? Just go ahead and, you know, I made the noises like I like. And
well, that's what she was offended by, because her son went home and told her. And
that was something else. The fact that this kid went home and basically squealed. Not squeal, but...
Don't you think the kids are going to tell their parents? You and I have had this discussion before. You expect a level of loyalty from students at the expense of their parents, don't you?
No, I don't. No, I don't think it's at the expense of their parents. I expect loyalty. I expect loyalty from my football players. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, if you are having these two-a-days, and you're yeah, look. The parents are going to be concerned if the kids are not safe in terms of their physical well-being, and I know that you're very mindful of that. It's very hot. They do need water and so forth, and they need to rest and so on. When you get into these mind things that you're talking about, where you're testing the mental toughness of a kid, and it's verbal, this is what some of these parents are concerned with.
Well, Phil, forgive me, but I've been in the middle of it. You're just hearing about this secondhand from Schramm, who is our headmaster, and he's a good man, but he doesn't know anything about football. And I respect him more than any man I think I've ever worked with. He's a great educator, but I've told him, and I think he understands. I've told him that, you know, football, this is my area, and I need for him to keep as far away from it as he can humanly get, because if I've got a headmaster, if I got a principal hanging around the football practice, and all of a sudden he's going to start telling me, see, it doesn't work that way, so. When I found out about this mother who called up and said she didn't like me making sucking noises. And
so that's what you did?
Yes, sir.
So you said to this boy, do you want to go home to your mama?
I said, do you want to go home to mama and you want to sit on her lap and go ahead and take mama's milk and just go, meh, meh, meh. I made a noise like that. And the other kids laughed. But this kid looked like he was going to bawl, and I knew right there I had to get rid of him. I knew right there I had a weak link in the chain.
And so you're humiliating a kid.
No, sir, I'm not humiliating.
Well, that's what it sounds like to me. You know, you're making fun of him, saying you want to go home to mama, and you're making this sucking noise. And
well, look, the kid had already started. He said something to me that no one ever says to me. And he said, hey, coach, if we come in second, do we still make the playoffs? And I said to him, now you get away from me.
What was wrong with the question?
What was wrong with the question is that the man came up to me.
A kid.
All right, the kid came up to me. Okay, the kid. The kid came up to me and said, hey, coach, if we come in second. I said, right there, get as far away from me as you could get. Get as far away from me as Principal Schramm got. Just go, get away. And he hung around. So that's when I said, hey, you see Armstrong here? He wants to go home. And he wants to get some mama. And I made noises, yeah.
All because the kid asked you about finishing second? Let me ask you, by the way, do you make the playoffs if you finish second?
Yes, we do, but I don't allow anybody on my team, and I really don't, would rather you not say anything, because my mind, I have geared toward one thing, first place. And the fact that you're saying it, Phil, I think is sadistic. And I think you know that I don't accept that.
No, but I wanted to know what the kid's...
If the kid is saying a question, you know, you have to quit being so nervous. It's usually you say they ask a question. They don't say a question.
I know that. I'm saying to you, if the kid's asking a question, is it not a legitimate question?
Not on my football team. No one asks me about finishing second, Mr. Henry. And if these kids want to go home to mama, because that's what I said to them. And the other kids laugh. They think that Coach Dozier is funny. When I single out one or two of these weak sisters, and I said, you there, little girl, do you want to go home to your mama? Hmm? Yeah, you're right. It humiliates them. You're right. It offends. But guess what? Guess what else it does? It weeds out the weak sisters. It weeds out the weak link. I cannot afford to have a weak link. I'm forging a chain. And that chain is going to carry me right on through to divisional finals come December.
Okay, Coach Vernon Dozier with us on the football program, the two-a-days, and just how much he lets adults and parents get involved in this. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. The other thing testing the mental toughness of the players by essentially mocking them, calling them little girls. How much of that do we need in a modern educational setting? And football practice at the high school level, folks, is education. It's not just football. It's a part of their education. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show. I'll be right back.
We can't fight this fight alone. Give us a call. 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
Mommy?
Call the Patriot Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-7445, and online at philhendryshow.com. We're also at Twitter, at twitter.com/realphilhendry. We got about 9 million Twitter accounts, and that way we stay on top of and underneath everybody. Now, Vernon Dozier joining us from Belmar Academy tonight is a meet and greet for the families of freshmen that are incoming. You have a frosh and B team?
We have a frosh soft team, Phil.
What? I don't know why I call it B team.
That's an old term. We don't use that too much anymore. We have a frosh team, frosh soft team that Coach Isaacson and two or three of the other coaches, Coach Statton, is involved with them, and then we have our JV, but primarily I coach the varsity, and then our JVs are coached by Coach Sutherland and some of the other coaches from my staff. But what we do is during Hell Week, we have all the squads together except for the frost soft. We don't put freshmen and sophomores through Hell Week. Not the same kind of Hell Week.
All right, when you talk about the intensive Hell Week, and you've had run-ins with parents. What are the parents saying?
Well, in the case of this one woman, she wanted me talking about going home. And yeah, I told this kid, Armstrong, I said, go home to your mama. You know, go home to mommy. Go home to daddy. Go on home. You know, run on home. And she said I was being cruel. I'm going to bring... you wanted me to talk to Father McQuarters, right?
Father McQuarters is also sort of the chaplain for the team.
Father McQuarters is a diocesan priest here at Belmar, Father. Father, Phil Hendry on the...
Father McQuarters.
Yes, Phil.
I wanted to talk with you about your work with the varsity team there.
Absolutely.
Have you encountered any of these parents that are upset with the kind of the hardcore way that Coach Dozier does things?
Well, I know that I'm very close with the Armstrong family, and this young boy, Dallas... I was part of the freshman team last year, and the Coach Dozier had said to him that we wanted a mindset, you know, for the football team.
Let me... this is what I said to him, that don't say second place.
And he said, don't talk to me about second place. And so he said to this young man, perhaps you'd be more comfortable if you went home and you spent time with your mama. Or words to that effect. I'm not exactly sure what it was, but and this boy went home and talked to his mother, and then I got this call from this Mrs. Armstrong, Sally Armstrong, and we spoke about this, and I talked to her about her son.
Well, what did you say?
I said to her that her boy was on a football team, and that football is a very important in the Catholic faith. I know that you were raised Catholic, Phil. And Coach Dozier was not, but coaches our team and understands the tradition in the Catholic high school and Catholic and college football is very important in the Catholic faith. And for any child to be involved in the Catholic football program, he simply must devote himself 1,000% to the Catholic football program and to faith in the Virgin Mary and to faith in Jesus Christ. Because football is a part of the faith.
What is it about football that makes it...
It is a part of our faith, not a part of the religious liturgy. but is it a part of reminding us that God can help us in even the most rigorous of times? And so, when you go to football two-a-days, as this young boy did, and you say, Coach, what if we finish second? It's a blasphemy. It's a blasphemy.
Why is that a blasphemy?
A blasphemy. You don't say, do I want to finish second? And you don't say that and then complain if the coach told you to go home and sit down and get a drink of milk from your mama. You understand what I'm saying?
I understand you, Father, but why is it a blasphemy?
Why is it a blasphemy?
He's asking, why is it a blasphemy to say second place?
Football, as you know, going back to the early days of Notre Dame, going back to the days of Boston College, Georgetown, these are all great schools, Catholic schools, that celebrated the football program.
I understand that. But why is football, I've never understood, even though I was raised Catholic, I've never really understood why football is such an important part of the Catholic education.
Because it teaches these young people that if you're Catholic, you don't take anything from nobody. You see?
I try to tell them.
You don't take anything from nobody. And I'm a Catholic. I believe in Jesus Christ. Oh, really? Well, ha-ha. Well, watch this. Boom. 80-yard pass. Just scored on you. You lose, sucker. You see what I mean?
That's why we say, why don't you just go on home to your mama? You know?
The Catholic faith. I'm a Catholic, really? Well, I don't like Catholics. You don't? Maybe you won't like this one either. 60-yard touchdown run. Oh, I guess you lose. See? You know what I mean?
I understand. All right, we're going to be coming back here.
But there are more religious ways and more religious things I want to get into.
All right, hold on. Father James McCorders is with us. Our number 877-876 Phil and Vernon Dozier. I was going to say Father Vernon Dozier. I better know. And Vernon Dozier, head football coach at Belmar Academy. As we talk about the two-a-days, football training in summertime, the mental harassment that a lot of these kids are taking from the coaches, and the football culture in a Catholic high school. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We'll be right back.
That is what I'm saying.
Phil Hendry. Call the Patriot Hotline now, 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
And welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL, and online at philhendryshow.com, and just all kinds of places. Welcome back to the program. We're talking with Father James McCorders from Belmar Academy, Vernon Dozier. We're talking about the football season that's coming up and the training that goes into this football season and the two-a-days and this mental toughness that you like to talk about, Coach Dozier, where you're asking a kid, does he want to go home to his mama, you know?
Phil, I'm not trying to, it's not my intention to humiliate, and I think this is something with the parents especially don't understand. I'm trying to get a kid to loosen up the apron strings. I cannot afford to have these kids coming into our camp, into our football training program in the summertime. I cannot afford it. I just can't afford to have them come in and they're still sucking on their mama. If you pardon me for saying that, they still got their mama. Their mama, you know. They want to have mama. Father McCorders, you don't.
What Coach Dozier's saying, Phil, is we're trying to make men out of these young men. We're trying to make them men and not to keep them as boys, you see. And we've had so many young men fail in life because they don't have the strength to tackle life's challenges like a man.
Well, there's no question that we definitely want everyone to reach their potential, you know.
Well, right there is what we're talking about, Phil, to reach your potential. But I can't get a kid to reach his potential if he's going home to his mama and he's squealing. He's squealing on me. Coach Dozier did this. Coach Dozier did that. And that's why we have five recorders. You tell him about being there.
You know, Phil, I'm the spiritual chaplain of the school of the football team as well. And before the game, we'll have them hit a knee. And when we say hit a knee, you know.
That means when they say hit a knee.
They know what it means. What it means is we're going to pray.
Yes.
And I say, let's hit a knee.
Right.
And I say, God, dear God, please, Father, keep these young men safe. And don't let any harm befall them. As they go into the football game and they play in the football game that you have given us the freedom, Father, to play. And the boys will go onto the field and run and throw and catch the ball and run. Everything that you do in a football game.
Can I interrupt something?
No, you may not interrupt. You may not.
He does this all the time, though, and I wanted to say.
Who's he?
You.
Right, well, then say Father McQuarters. Don't say he.
I understand, but can I say, Phil, he does this all the time. Goes on and on and on and on, and I've told him. One of the problems we have with the parents is the parents will say, we're here to pick our sons up after the game. They're waiting at the locker room door to get their kid, and he's going through a prayer.
I'm not going through a prayer. I'm praying to God and to the Virgin Mary and thanking her for a win, but I'm talking about the prayer before the game. You understand the difference? G.D. your hide.
G.D. my hide?
All right, let me just hear him, and we can hear from you in a moment, Coach.
Yeah, sure.
Wow.
You just damned my hide.
Yes, I did. You understand? And I say, Phil, this is the prayer before the game, not after the game. This is the one before the game.
You're going on forever. You're never going to get a kickoff.
This is the one before the game.
I understand that.
I say, dear Father, please allow these young men to go out and dance and play and sing and frolic.
What I resent so very violently.
What would you...
What do you resent?
He's talking about football like we're frolicking and dancing.
I'm saying the prayer that these are young men who are out in the flower of their youth, enjoying the sunshine.
Most of the games are at night.
And playing, and, you know, I don't give a damn if they're at night. And I'll say, Father, please protect us from injury. And if there's going to be a boy, in your wisdom, Father, the boy must be paralyzed. Please let it be a member of the other team, not the boys on our team.
You don't pray for that, do you?
That was a very controversial prayer, but they went ahead and they greenlit it.
Yeah, we greenlit it at the administration, and I'll tell you why, Phil. God is going to do what God's going to do. I don't know what God's got in mind. You don't know what God's got in mind. You know?
There's no telling what God's going to do.
So he's going to do what he's going to do. God plays his games. We play ours, you know. And so we had Father McQuarters, and I'd seen Patton, and in the movie, George Patton has the Padre write a prayer so that the weather clears and they can attack the Germans. And I thought I would have Father McQuarters write a prayer so that if somebody's going to get paralyzed from the neck down, it's not one of our guys.
So you had him write a prayer for that? That's the most ghoulish prayer I've ever heard.
What do you mean, ghoulish?
What's that mean?
What it means is, if you're going to have someone paralyzed, please make it somebody on the other team. I got to tell you something. Why even mention it? Why not just say, God, you know, protect everybody that is playing tonight?
I just got done telling you. I'm not going to tell God. Are you telling God what to do?
Let me handle this, okay?
Nobody's...
Let me handle it. If you don't mind, I can handle it because I'm a priest. I'm a priest. You're a coach.
I understand that, Father. But
I'm a priest. You're a coach. You understand?
Okay, Father McQuarters.
Hold on for a minute. You understand the difference?
I understand the difference.
All right, how many times am I going to go through it?
Father McQuarters.
Yes, Phil.
I don't allow that kind of yelling anywhere in my life, least of all on my show.
I apologize, but I've been through this time and again with this meathead.
I didn't...
Yes, you did know. Don't say you didn't know, you did. I'm a priest, you're a coach. I'm a priest, you're a coach. Know the difference?
Yes, sir, I do.
Good! And this is a part of what I know, Phil, and I will tell you this. God is going to do what he wants to do. You can't stop him, neither can I.
I understand that, but can we not intercede? Can we not, in the words of, actually I heard Jim Morrison say this, petition the Lord in prayer?
How dare you bring up that song? How dare...
I'm sorry, Father. It was the only time I ever heard that, and I thought it was actually a good thing, even though Morrison was mocking it.
That man blasphemed. Jim Morrison is an apostate. He's a jack Catholic. Jim Morrison never belonged in the Catholic faith. And as an apostate and a heretic, he mocked our Lord and the process of prayer in that song.
I don't know what you guys are talking about.
Never mind. All right, so prayer...
I'm the priest, you're the coach. That's all you need to know. You don't have to butt in and say anything. And I said to them, I hope you don't get hurt, but if anyone is to suffer paralysis of the kind that Christopher Reeve suffered, please let it be a member of the opposing squad. And then I went back to the rectory. I had dinner, and I went to sleep. Now, that's all I did.
That night, the kid got paralyzed on the other team.
You're kidding.
Well, I'm not.
But that wasn't me. That was God.
That was God. I got to tell you something. Did the parents of... So another kid got paralyzed on the other team.
Yes.
Are you going to make a big deal out of that?
Yeah, I'm going to make a big deal out of it from this standpoint, Father. It's the most ghoulish prayer I've ever heard. Now we find out that a kid gets paralyzed. I'm not going to say that your prayer caused it, but I will say that the mindset that it takes for a prayer like that is not the kind of mindset that's going to deal with the actuality of something that horrible happening. How are you going to help the kids get through it?
Well, it was the other team, wasn't our kids.
It doesn't make any difference if it was the other team. The kids on your team are going to hear about it. They saw it happen, didn't they?
But he's got a point.
Don't turn this into a comedy routine, you understand?
I'm not turning anything into a comedy, but the point that I made to this guy was that I'm the priest. I did the prayer, the best prayer that I do.
Look at him. You want to go home to Mama now? See, this is what I'm talking about. You know, I ask for tough people to help me with my football program, and they send me this priest. You want to go home to Mama? You know, the other problem with him is you're drunk. Are you a drunk? Are you a drunk?
I want to have a drink.
Yeah, he wants to have a drink.
Okay, I'm hanging up now.
No. Don't pass out on me yet. Don't pass out on me yet. No. That's a line from Dirty Harry. Remember that?
Yes, I do.
All right, now listen. You hear that priest, that drunk? That's the kind of sissy they send me. That's the kind of sissy they send me.
All right, I've heard the two of you guys going through all manner of emotional breakdown. I don't want to hear it anymore. Do you understand?
Hold on.
I'm going to get a drink.
Now, Phil, the next time you invite me on your program, be man enough to deal with the world that I live in, okay? Live in it, son. Live in it. Be man enough to deal.
We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. I apologize for what you just were put through. I apologize to my staff. I apologize, frankly, to myself. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
One drink? Huh? One drinking?
Yeah.
To call the Patriot Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
Welcome back here, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Next hour is our News and Information Hour, and I can't tell you the origin of the mental illness that we heard there between Father McCorders and Vernon Dozier. It sounds as if there is some kind of alcoholism at work. There is a sadomasochistic relationship going on between Vernon Dozier and Father McCorders. At one point, I heard the father begging for a drink, and I heard Dozier mocking him almost as if I was watching The Days of Wine and Roses. I apologize, but there really isn't much we can do. This is live radio. 877-876-PHIL is our number. Let me get, first of all, let me turn off the hip-hop music that you left on, bud.
I didn't do it.
Yes, you did, so that I can use another module here on our network. On the line with us from Jetem Lingerie is a longtime contributor to our program, and we're very grateful to have him with us, Vernie. Rudy, how you doing?
You're good, Phil. This is the first time I've ever been called Vernie, but I'm doing very well, and I appreciate very much you to let me on your program.
Now, the reason why I wanted to get you on the show is because you talked about going with some kind of a dating service, correct?
Yes.
All right. Now, don't tell me the name of it. I don't really want to know. I do want to know how effective it was, and not because I'm interested for myself, but because we've heard more and more and more and more that a lot of these dating services are under suspicion for, you know, not qualifying people, vetting people.
No, that stories have been circulating for the longest time. The safety of these dating services, as you're saying.
You know, women are at risk, and there was one woman I think was sexually assaulted, and she took the this dating service to court.
Yes, there's any number of risks that can be a risk that can be taken when you are availing yourself of these dating services. I don't use them myself. I'm fortunate as a single man. I do a lot of traveling, as you know, back and forth from the United States to Argentina, which is where my business originates.
Now, you were in the import-export business, right?
Excuse me?
You were in the import-export?
Yes. I did import-export business for 15 years from Buenos Aires to Los Angeles and to San Francisco, New York. And then I settled part-time business in Los Angeles. Not part-time, full-time business in Los Angeles with my partner, which is a Jetem Lingerie.
And, but where you're a single man. Were you ever married?
I was married early in my life, but preferred the single life.
And, all right, so where do you meet women?
I meet them everywhere. I would meet them in business. I meet them in my... most of the time, I meet them in travel. Meet them in my home country. I meet them here in the United States. My home is in Argentina. I have a home in Los Angeles, and I have a home in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, which is part of another store that we want to open for the tourists there. And
so you meet women just socially and through business because of, I imagine, Rudy, and I'm going to pay you a compliment, that you are that you're engaging in that. You know what I mean? You're an outgoing guy.
I don't think I'm that gregarious, you know, but I suppose.
You know, there's some guys that are very shy. Some women are very shy. And how do they meet people? Where do they go? I imagine this is very much a challenge. But for you, so that when you went ahead and you used this dating service at our request, it's not like you need it.
No, I don't. But I thought it was interesting. I met a young lady through the dating service.
What was her name? Just give us her first name.
Her first name was Faith.
Faith?
Yes.
Okay. And you met her, and the two of you sort of hooked up based upon what?
Based upon the profile information that we filled out. I told in my profile, I told her, told any prospective woman, I said, well, my name is Rudy, and I'm a businessman, I'm a salesman, and a business owner, and I told the truth, you know, I have a 2 or 3 home and this and that, and so I suppose a man like me...
Do you put your picture there?
Yes, you put your picture, and...
And what were you, if you don't mind me asking, Rudy, what were you wearing?
I was wearing a big, I wear mostly what I call a flow, I wear shirts that are called my club shirt or a flow chart shirt, not a flow chart, it's called a low altitude shirt,
What do you mean by that?
Well, you have a different kind of shirt with a bigger collar or a small collar. The big collar, the big wide collar, I call it high altitude, because you want to fly, you know, la-la-la-la-la, you know what I mean?
Okay, yeah, all right, so all right, enough of that, but I wanted to ask you, so when you met the woman, based upon everything that you guys saw in each other, was she attractive? What can you tell me about her?
Yes, she was an attractive woman. She was a woman in her early 30s. I don't want to tell you too much. I said, I'm Rudy, and I took her to a nice dinner at the Argentinian restaurant that I know in Los Angeles, in the valley, you know, in Woodland Hills. So, and then I told her, in my country, Argentina, we have a tradition which we express our
himself to a woman to tell her that she is lovely, that she is lovely in the sense that she is lovely like a sunrise, you know. She is lovely like a beautiful tree or a flock of birds that fly across the morning sky. This is the kind of beauty that we mean. And then I told her, and we expressed that in a custom in which the man, making almost like a bird, like a mating sound, we say, la, 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 you know. And
okay, so this is this, you call this, what is this?
What did you just say?
I'm sorry, what do you call that, la, la, la?
Well, you know, you have to have some respect. It's not la, 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 it's la, la, ha, la. You see what I mean?
Okay. What do you call that?
There's nothing in English that I can, there's no words that describe it, but in Spanish, it basically means a greeting. That's what it's a greeting, but it's more than a greeting. It's to say to the woman, la 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 la, you are like a cloudburst, you are like fireworks, it's not sexual, you see. But it also, the sexuality informs it, you see. It informs it.
All right, so when did you say this to this woman?
At the end of dinner, I looked at her. I took her hand in mine. I looked at her over the candlelight, and I said, abalalala.
Okay, and what did she say?
Well, that's when I found out that, and you don't believe in it in your country because you think that you're so educated in America. Not you, Phil, but I've been around enough Americans to know that Americans no longer believe in what we call any man, any real man knows is a woman to be frigid. You see what I mean by this?
Yeah, well, okay. You're right. We don't really believe in that in our country anymore. Well, we've found that that's most likely the result, what you call frigid, is most likely the result of just a very unfulfilling sexual relationship. And there's no such thing as a woman that cannot enjoy sex, okay? Like, there's probably no such thing as a guy, unless there's some physical injury or abnormality that I can't right now I don't want to get into, but...
Well, what do you mean by that? Because you say there's no such thing.
Right.
And yet I said to this woman, la, 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 that unlocks any frigid...
Well, what happened?
What happened was I gave her the greeting, and as you know, Phil, there are different greetings. There's one for, you are lovely like the sunrise, la, 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 la. There's one which basically goes even deeper and says, I want you to mother my children tonight. And that is, you know...
Okay, I don't see how any woman finds that attractive.
Can I finish, please, before you go off on what is predictably your... You always launch into this. Can I finish?
Yes.
So, you do la-la-la-la, then you go boo, and then then it's not just blue, it's blah-blah-blah, and...
It's blah-blah-blah, that means what?
That means I want you to have my baby. Then there's a third one I can't remember. So... But in any event, God.
Yeah, we've run out of time.
Well, can I mail in the rest of my interview?
Phil Hendry.
Because I've got a few more things to say.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
World famous Phil Hendry Show, and welcome back here at number 877-876-PHIL, and we're online at philhendryshow.com. This is a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch, and basically where we go places other talk shows cannot go, and we do it every damn night, and we do it better than anybody else. And somebody passed along a quote from Jonathan Swift that absolutely describes the condition of our radio show. Jonathan Swift. Okay. You know who Jonathan Swift was?
Yeah. Probably wasn't too swift.
I'm going to belt somebody. Jonathan Swift was a satirist from the 18th century. He's a satire writer. But he wasn't being a satirist when he said, and I'm paraphrasing, he said that you will know the genius in your midst. You will know when there is a genius in your midst. when a confederacy of dunces is allied against him. You ever heard of the book Confederacy of Dunces? Well, they took the title from that quote, Jonathan Swift, who was basically saying that people who are outside the box, who are genius in their thinking, people that offer something such an extraordinary nature that more often than not, the world doesn't honor them. The world does not take them into their breast and suckle them. The world doesn't appreciate them at all. Not at all. The world doesn't even recognize what's quality until it's long dead. This has been the way the world has operated for thousands of years. Maybe someday there'll be a quantum leap in intelligence, like a second great leap forward, but it ain't happening anytime now, around now. But fact is, what he was saying was that people who are extraordinary, who offer something extraordinary, who offer something so good, so quality, that the world might miss it, more often than not, not only do we miss it, but a confederacy of dunces, the stupid, get together and go against that thing, whatever it may be. A confederacy of dunces, very, very strong, very pointed, and very on the mark. Shows you what they were dealing with 200-300 years ago is exactly the same thing we're dealing with today. The worst person in the room is the guy who says the following thing. Well, everybody seems to think that what we should do is this, so that's what we ought to do. No? I mean, if we're in a democracy and we vote and majority rules, yes, of course, I agree with you. But that doesn't mean it's the right thing to do. Understand that. I'm not saying, you know, go through revolution and overthrow the government. I'm not saying any of that stuff. I'm just telling you that because everyone in the room says, let's go and do this, it doesn't mean it's going to be the right thing to do. We could all be walking off a cliff together. We got to trust. There's one thing you got to trust, man, in a world like the one we're living in, you know. You got to trust this. You got to trust that the level of education, the level of self-knowledge and awareness of the world around ourselves is at such a high level that we are making, more often than not, the right decision. That's why we value education. That's why in our country we have disdain for stupidity. As much as we wallow in stupidity in this country sometimes, and as much as it seems like stupid is the new vogue, stupid is the new cool, We hate it. We just despise it. Because we know that eventually stupid is the new hell. You know, if you've got nothing but imbeciles to talk to, you're not making sense with anybody and you're lost. So, Jonathan Swift, who was also the guy who wrote if you want to know what kind of a satirist Jonathan Swift was, basically he was very famous for writing an essay on how to solve the hunger problem in Ireland, you know. And at that time, in many times, Ireland was suffering through a very, very difficult times, famine, starvation. People were hungry. And in the 18th century, it was quasi-feudal still in Ireland for sure. Jonathan Swift wrote an essay. He said, well, now, let me tell you how you can solve the problem of hunger among the Irish. And I've been told that this is a fantastic thing.
Oh, I know what you're going to say.
What's he going to say?
I'm going to tell you.
What are you going to say?
Shut up and let me say it. He said, I know how you can solve the problem of hunger among the Irish. What you do is, and I've been told this is very, very delicious, you take the very young of the Irish, the very young ones, okay? They haven't lived very long. They don't, you know. And you eat them. Now, Swift was brilliant, so he didn't just come out and say that. He couched it in terms like he was discussing an Epicurean delight. You know, like he was, well, here's how you, and you can baste them in gravy, and oh, yeah, it was a beautiful thing. And naturally, it created an uproar, and it was one of the very earliest examples of really biting on-target satire. Because, as we've often said, satire is humor with a point of view. Satire's humor with a point of view. What was he saying? He was basically saying, you don't give a damn whether these people starve to death. England doesn't care whether they're killing the Irish. They don't care whether they're starving them to death. The people here in this country, they don't give a damn whether there's people dying by the thousands. This would be England's solution to the problem of hunger in Ireland. Eat the young. Eat the children. This is how we work in our country. This is the level of compassion we have. This is the level of concern that we have. This is how evolved we are as a society that we couldn't care less. As far as we're concerned, the Irish can eat their own children if they're that hungry. That's what he was saying. That was the comment that he was making on English society. And it was absolutely devastating. It was a devastating point. It had great truth to it. It pissed off a lot of people, as all good satire must. Notice I didn't say that satire will piss off people. It must piss off people. But it also must make a point. So you will find that a lot of people don't get it either, you know. Now, when you're doing a radio show like our radio show, which is, you know, it takes a lot of work and it's a performance, we have found, in our experience, a confederacy of dunces, otherwise known as the radio industry. All right. Okay, we got news this hour and our news and information hour. I don't know how much time we have to get into this first one. Bud picked this one out. You like this one, Bud? Why?
Well, this is a story about Steven Seagal. I think this guy's going to sue him.
All right, Steven Seagal, legal threats over deadly cockfight raid. Is that it?
Yeah, he ran over a puppy with a Jeep.
He ran over a puppy with a Jeep.
No, he didn't, man.
What was it?
He said that the puppy got shot.
The puppy got shot. Well, according to TMZ, the blood of a dead puppy is on Steven Seagal's hands. This, according to an Arizona man who claims the actor participated in a deadly police raid on his home back in March that was taped for a reality show. Seagal, along with Maricopa County Sheriff Joe Arpaio, has been served with an official notice of claim from Jesus Sanchez Lovera, who contends Seagal and the Maricopa County Sheriff's Department performed an unfounded raid on his home because they believed Jesus was operating an illegal cockfighting farm. Jesus denies the allegation, insisting he only raises the roosters, quote, for show. Jesus claims, wait just a minute.
But you gotta read it.
Yeah, I'm gonna read it, but what do you mean for show? What do you mean for show? Now, I know there's certain cultural traditions. I know about cockfighting. I ain't never heard about putting a, well, maybe.
You ain't never heard about showing off a cock.
Will you shut up? Jesus claims Seagal arrived to his home on March the 9th with a tank. A T-A-N-K, which is some piece of tactical equipment used by the police, and rammed into a gate on his property. Seagal was backed up by an MSCO Tactical Operations Unit, armed in full riot gear, which stormed the house. The entire incident was captured by a camera crew taping for Seagal's reality show, Steven Seagal Lawman. Yeah, sure. Jesus claims his 11-month-old puppy was shot and killed during the raid, and his home sustained substantial damage. He also claims the cops killed more than 100 roosters that belonged to him. The notice of claim is the first step toward a lawsuit. And Jesus' lawyer tells us his client is demanding $100,000 for the damage, and he wants Seagal to issue a formal written apology to his children for the death of their 11-month-old puppy, a beloved family pet. TMZ called both Seagal and the Maricopa County Sheriff's Department for comment. No response so far. Now, if it's true that you killed a puppy, Mr. Seagal, dude, that's going to be a little bit of a public relations thing to get to kind of climb over. I don't know, and I, you know, whatever you're doing. Did you arrest this guy? Was he actually operating a cockfighting farm? What was going on there? Was he cited? Was he, you know? That having been said, it doesn't make much difference, does it, if you killed an 11-month-old puppy? Puppy death, it don't go.
Yeah, man, you kill a puppy, man, they don't give a damn what you've done.
It doesn't matter, unless you killed a puppy if the puppy died like killing Osama bin Laden, maybe, then.
No, I don't think so.
Why not?
Are you saying that they would have killed Osama bin Laden's puppy?
Yeah, if we would have killed, by mistake, Osama bin Laden's puppy as we were killing Osama bin Laden, don't you think that
No, probably not, man. The PETA'd come out and they'd be all pissed off.
Yeah, PETA probably would be.
What the hell is with you, man? You still got, you know,
What do you mean by the puppy?
You don't know what I mean by a puppy? If a puppy got killed when... Oh, well, never mind. So you murdered a puppy, huh, Seagal? Well, good for you. That's great. Well, Mr. Henry, no, it's not me. I mean, that's fine. I don't care. I understand a guy's got to make a living. Don't, you know, I'm with you, man. I'm on your side. But you got to understand, I'm sure you do, it doesn't make any difference if you found an illegal cockfighting farm. It doesn't matter if they're having a brutal display of animals killing each other, as these cockfighting events obviously are put onto display, these animals that are designed to kill each other. It doesn't make any difference if you were saving the lives of a million roosters, one puppy down in that raid, and PETA's going to crawl all over you like maggots on a crap hill.
Very good, Miss Henry.
Thank you. We'll be right back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. A hedge fund manager commits suicide one day after his friend, the late Real Housewives husband, did the same thing. We're talking about Russell Armstrong. Well, his friend committed suicide one day later. What is this all about? We'll find out. We come back. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Radio.
What are you doing, Mr.
For
Henry?
Patriots.
Thank you.
By Patriots. It's the Phil Henry Show. For Patriots, by Patriots. It's the Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. And by the way, Steven Seagal, for all of your great work in films, you're a...
giant douche nozzle.
If you kill that puppy. All right, we're kidding. I have no idea. You know?
I'd say for sure he'd be a giant douche nozzle on account of a puppy.
Well, we don't know, and I'm not about to indict a man for something that I don't know what he done. You dig? You know, I ain't about to say guy's a murdering scumbag if he ain't. That'd be like me asking...
Are you gay?
When I know... Anyway, 877-876-PHIL, and welcome back to our program here, the world-famous Phil Henry Show. The day after Real Housewives husband Russell Armstrong was found dead after hanging himself, good God, his friend and business associate Alan Schramm also took his own life. As reported by TMZ, Schramm's body was found August 16th in a parked car on a street in Los Angeles. The coroner's report determined the cause of death was a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head. Schramm and Armstrong were friends and business associates, according to TMZ. Both men were also connected through Tiger 21, an elite group for high net worth investors. Neither of the men left a suicide note. It's a strange coincidence, but it's unclear if the two deaths are connected. Armstrong was reportedly having financial troubles. He was also going through a divorce with his wife and reality television star Taylor Armstrong. You know, I recognize, how can you have sympathy for this woman? And, you know what I mean? In other words, she had allegedly spoken disparagingly of her marriage publicly. And now she a reality television star, you know? She's a big star now. And, see, that's the disdain that I have. I'm sorry. But if I'm realistic, and I've got to be smart, and we all have to be smart if we're going to live in a world that it takes increasing levels of brain power just to get out of bed in the morning and negotiate the dumbasses that you meet, honest to God, you have to recognize you can't put down anything that people find. If it's entertaining, it's entertaining. And if people want to watch that garbage, then they're going to watch it. Do you think it's garbage? Yes. Do I? Yes. Do we matter? No!
Yeah, but I like that show.
I figured you would.
You like that show, man, only because you like to look at a good-looking woman. You don't think that show's interesting, do you?
Well, I don't know. Sometimes I do.
Well, I don't.
Why?
Because I know, let me tell you what I don't like about reality TV, and I've said this a million freaking times. I don't know how many freaking times I got to tell you. Okay, what I don't like about reality TV is that, A, it's...
bleeping retarded.
No, the reason why I don't like reality TV is because... Why don't I like it?
Because of the...
it's because it ain't reality. It's not reality.
What do you mean it's not reality? Those are real people.
Sure they're real people. There's real people everywhere, man. I can go anywhere you want, and I got real people. I got real people walking down the street. I got real people in the studio right now. I got real people anywhere you want to have real people. Some people are acting real. Some people are reading from a script. Some people are putting it on. Some people are pretending they're real and they're not. Reality TV are people pretending they're real and they're not. They're not real, man. This is not reality television. These cats are told, here's the scene. Basically, what they are non-professional actors improvising. That's what they're doing.
Well, what does that mean?
What it means is they're told, first of all, they're not professional actors. They're just cats that they found wherever the hell they found them, a tattoo parlor or someplace. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. I get, you know, I'm not judging what people find entertaining. I'm just telling you what I think is good. So, but the fact is, that's where they found them, in a tattoo parlor. Am I wrong or am I right?
Well, I mean, we talk about Jersey Shore.
And yeah, any one of them doesn't make any difference. You know, different coast, same tattoo parlor, you know. So they find them. They go, wow, you guys are very interesting, and we have a premise that we want to do. And the premise is called Scumbags of the Beach, all right? Now, we went and we found all of you homeless slobs, and we're going to put you in a pad and just, you know, watch as you vomit your way through a day. Go to the methadone clinic. See, I would think that would be great. I'm kidding. Although, celebrity rehab, so. No, so we'll, you know. Oh, yeah, that's great. Right. Now, what do you do if it's boring?
Well, if it's reality TV, you just got to live with it.
No way. No, no. They don't live with anything, man. Not when they got all that money tied up. And are you nuts? Are you nuts? Yeah, hi, I'm MTV. And, well, what are we going to do? We got a reality show, and they suck, and they're boring. Eh, I guess we're stuck with it. No, we're not stuck with anything, man. Not with the money I got tied up in this thing. You get them down there. You give them a premise. Today, Susie is going to get into a fist fight with whatever the hell. Snooki is going to go and get her hair caught in a roller coaster rail someplace. And we're going to make it interesting. Why can we do that? It's reality. We can do anything we want. We can do anything we want. We can call Snooki the next best thing to Elizabeth Taylor if we want to. We can say that all these people deserve Emmys. We can say that this is the greatest thing that's ever happened since the Academy Awards. We can call it anything we want. We can do anything we want with it because that's what we do for a living. So the next thing you have is basically this. You don't have a reality show. You have a bunch of real people, non-professional actors, who are going through improv scenes that they have been given to play. There's no dialogue, there's no written script, but there is a scene that they have to play. You guys are going to go in here, yeah, and you see the thing that Charlie found, what was that thing? A dead body. All right, go in there and talk about it, but then Mary, I want you to get really angry about the fact that the dead body they brought home and laid in the living room because you got to get ready for work. Okay, you see? So you guys just talk about it, and then she does. And we'll film, we'll do it a couple times, do it 3-4 times. We've got all the time in the world. We're doing it on videotape, doesn't cost any money. You know, the bread we're making on this thing with advertising alone, God, we're making out like bandits. We're paying you slobs whatever we're paying you. Because I got news for you, whatever those guys think they're making on Jersey Shore, they're getting screwed. Because MTV is making a bundle. Who is that guy they're paying $1 million to?
That one guy, I forget his name.
Ain't there one guy on that show they're giving $1 million to?
Well, they're not giving them no $1 million an episode. Is that what you're talking about, $1 million an episode? I don't think anybody.
Well, there's some cat that got the big money deal. And I got news for you. If they're paying that guy the bread they said they're paying him, they're making more money with that show. Oh, my God. That's how you do it. And then they call it a day. You know, they'll usually... All right, time for lunch. And that's how you do that. So don't ever worry about it, man. Don't. That's the reality TV is not reality TV. Now, what's reality is a guy swinging from a noose. That's reality. All right, we'll get back to this man, Mr. Schramm, and the horror that was his life in the midst of all of this glory and glamour that am Hollywood. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and we'll be right back. Thank you. Phil Hendry.
Patriots by Patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, welcome back. And if you're joining us online at philhendryshow.com, watching our live Phil TV in HD, you see the beautiful El Pacifico behind us. boy, that's a gorgeous ocean out there, isn't it? And even as the summer rolls to an end here, we still have our El Pacifico. And so join us at philhenryshow.com and get yourself a batch.
Hold still.
Oh. Backstage pass. Thank you, bud.
Yeah.
877-876-PHIL. And joining me online, on the air, I should say, is Frank and Margaret Gray from Santa Monica. Margaret, is that you?
Phil, I wanted to bring Frank on the phone here. He has the gender confusion, as you know.
Now, let me explain to the audience. Frank Gray has a gender confusion. It is a neurologic disorder as the result of an untreated condition we don't have to go into right now, and I'd rather not.
Right. Gonorrhea. Oh, I'm sorry.
I said I didn't want to go into it. He has gender confusion. Otherwise, he's very healthy. Is he there?
I'm going to get him in a minute. He doesn't like us talking about it. Frank, Phil Hendry's on the phone.
Oh, good. I want to talk to her. How you doing, young man?
I'm good, Frank. How are you?
I'm better than Custer. Listen, I'm watching the MTV video, music, MTV, you know, the music video.
Yeah, the awards?
Yes, yes. And now I see this guy, Lady Gaga. He is, and I said, is a guy. And that means that he's a woman.
That's all right, now hold on, Frank, so that the audience understands, because of your gender confusion, you are having a hard time. Ordinarily, Lady Gaga was what gender?
What do you mean, what gender? He was a woman.
Okay, Lady Gaga, he was a woman.
You know, you talk as if you were born... As if you didn't get enough oxygen when you were born. Do you know that?
Yeah, Frank, you're right. I do.
Because he was a woman. I'm saying Lady Gaga was on this video cavalcade of... The cavalcade.
Right, the Video Music Awards.
The Video Music Awards. And he came out, and she's... Boy, she's ugly.
You see what I mean? He can't figure out what it was. I told Frank that Lady Gaga is a woman. He said, I know that, but it looks like a man. And he's referring to Lady Gaga as a she. And I thought, well, I called up Dr. Humphrey, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, is this a sign of some progress? And he said, no, he's stymied. It's what they call stymied or stunned. And it's a very, it's a temporary condition.
Well, do you remember the night that he was okay? I think he actually was tweeting in all the proper gender.
Yeah, that was when Jason J. Delmonico and I, we took the weekend, and we went down to my sister's in Orange County, and Frank was all by himself. The doctor said that was because of the fact that Frank was laying around all weekend in his robe with nothing else on, basically reading filthy magazines and just doing whatever he wanted to, and somehow that jarred his brain loose.
Yeah, well, the doctor put it a lot more graphically. He said Frank was laying around all weekend with a robe on, nothing underneath, reading filthy magazines, and self-blank.
Yes.
Okay, so he hasn't done that since?
Well, I don't know. I mean, we haven't been out of town.
What if you and Jason J. went out of town and left him to his own devices again?
It's worth a shot. I don't know. But I thought when I heard him, Frank, come here.
I don't want to do it.
Come here, Frank. Phil Hendry.
Okay. I like talking to Phil. Phil, how you doing?
Good, good, Frank. Now listen, you saw... Who did you see on the Video Music Awards?
I was watching the Video Music Award, and I saw him come out. And I said to Margaret, here's Lady Gaga. And I said, she's a ugly man. And I realized, is it a man or isn't it a woman? And I thought of the movie... It's Pat, and I had... You remember when Is It or Isn't She?
Well, is he or isn't she?
No. Is she or isn't he?
Okay.
And I determined that the actress, he, was a he?
No, the actress, Julia Sweeney, is a she.
Is a he.
Okay. you know.
What do you mean, okay?
That's correct, Frank. Yeah, see, his gender confusion's back.
Okay, if his gender confusion is back, what's the problem?
Well, if he called Julia Sweeney a he, then, Frank, what is Lady Gaga?
It's a he-she.
See, his brain is not working right. And it happened when that... I have to say it. It happened when that overplayed and really untalented slut came out. And
So you don't like Lady Gaga, I get it.
You don't like Lady Gaga, I get it. What does that mean?
I mean, I take it you don't like Lady Gaga is what I was trying to spit out, and I said it inelegantly.
No, I do not. I don't like any part of it. I think she is a ham. I think she's an exhibitionist. I think she's stuck up.
Well, doesn't she have a reason to be stuck up?
What do you mean, does she have a reason to be stuck up? Phil, I don't mind great singers, but by God, I'm not going to tolerate one coming out and making an ass out of you and me when we assume that someone is straight. I can sing better than her. As a matter of fact, I will. I'll sing a song. Do you want to hear me sing a song?
Not really.
Frank, Phil wants to hear me sing.
Oh, that's good. She wants to hear you sing, huh?
Yes, he does.
All right. Hey, Phil.
Yeah.
What do you want him to sing?
Have him sing Come Sail Away by Styx.
Okay. She wants you to sing Come Sail Away by Styx.
I'm sailing away, do-do-do-do-do, past the open sea, because I got to be free to live the kind of life that's ahead of me. On board, you're the captain. Get on board, Frank. So climb on top of me. We'll sail, I don't know the other words, to this bit of treacle, but we'll...
Okay, that's great. Thank you very much.
Well, I'm not even done. God, what a punk bitch.
Did she call you?
She called me a punk bitch. Sorry, Frank, I hope you get better, man, but I can't sit there talking to your old lady all night long, man. You know why? Because...
Effing retarded.
That's it. All right, here we go with... I was going to tell you about this very, very tragic story. It has to do with this gentleman by the name of Mr. Alan Schramm. Now, he was good friends with Russell Armstrong, the husband of the... the woman in the Real Housewives of El Segundo, or Beverly Hills. And in any event... Schramm and Armstrong were friends and business associates. Neither of the men left a suicide note. Schramm was the founder and managing partner of the equity fund WellCap Partners, an investment partnership based in Los Angeles, according to his bio. He also contributed to Seeking Alpha, and he contributed to the Huffington Post. I wonder if he contributed to the Huffington Post before Real Wives of the Thing came out, or, oh, this is Mr. Schramm, so he's a different commodity. He's the real deal. TMZ said Schramm's financial situation was unclear, but we did a little digging, according to TMZ, when I say we. In 2006, a filing with the SEC said that WellCap's assets were worth $27 million, according to Hedge Fund Alert, which is a downloadable PDF if you want to look for that. That same year, Hedge Fund Alert said he got into a bit of trouble with investors for, quote, lying about his education. Hedge fund manager Alan Schramm recently had some explaining to do after distributing marketing documents that misstated his academic background. Whatever. That doesn't mean jack squat. You understand? I understand. Yes, when it comes to misleading investors, you can claim fraud. I got to get to the real thing here, TMZ. You ain't got any goods in this guy's finances? Then keep your big fat beer drain shut. Mr. Schramm, who trades U.S. stocks via his WCM Capital, sent out materials for a fund called WellCap Partners that claimed he had learned whatever. This is not news. I want to know about, is this guy still making money? Schramm had to contact shareholders to acknowledge the incorrect information that got into his marketing papers. WellCap was forced to stop making new contributions as a result, and Schramm said he returned money to any investors who wanted out of the fund. How many wanted out of the fund? All right. In other words, there is nothing to indicate that this man was in any financial trouble. Not according to the investigation done by TMZ, which is kind of like asking a three-year-old to look into it, as far as I'm concerned. There was nothing, and I say nothing, that indicated this man was in financial trouble. Now, he took his own life. Why? He was a veteran of the Gulf War. He was an officer in the Israeli Air Force. He was an acknowledged financial success. He contributed to the Huffington Post and to another column, so he was a man whose knowledge, whose erudition concerning the financial world was respected and was sought. All we got is the fact that he lied about his education on some materials that were sent out. That doesn't tell me whether people wanted their money back, because according to TMZ, they said, well, he gave back money to people that wanted it back. Well, how many of those people were there? I got news for you. If the guy lied about his education, probably what would have happened is that if it was me, the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to look at my return. I'm going to look at my statements. What kind of rate of return? What's going on? Now, the first thing I'm going to think about is Bernie Madoff. Okay, this guy's a liar, because I'd be nervous. Like, everybody's nervous. Okay, wait a minute. What else has he lied about? So then I might say, hey, Alan, let's sit down and talk. What's going on here, man? I want to see my statements, all this stuff. And I want to verify. I don't give a damn if you lied about who you are, but if you lied about who you are and that's a sign there's something else wrong with you, I want to know that. But personally, I don't give a crap if you didn't get to the third grade, because if I'm happy with what you're doing, I'm happy with what you're doing. Now, the fact that you lied, do me a favor, don't lie anymore. Depending upon how much money I got with the guy and whether or not he's performing, you know, he's performing on my behalf with my investments. Something tells me, because of this man killing himself, that because the Bernie Madoff thing had a lot of people frightened, because the pyramid scheme thing has a lot of people frightened, the Ponzi scheme, because there's all kinds of nervous people, and you understand why, that maybe some of this rubbed off on Alan Schramm. Maybe the guy wasn't operating anything crooked. Maybe the only thing that he did wrong was, okay, so I lied on my thing about who I am and what I did, and people got nervous and said, I want my money back. Maybe he saw the potential of that unfolding because there were enough people who were beginning to ask for their money back. See, I'm just, that's my job. My job is to take this garbage can reporting that we bring to you from TMZ and other, sources, and then try to figure this crap out. That's what we do every single night on this show. I don't get anybody.
Oh, don't start to cry.
Oh, I'm just kidding. All right. I was just kidding, man, just to see if anybody out there was, awake. Now,
I don't know. You want me to check?
Yeah, go ahead and check. All right, now.
Burn in hell.
Are they awake?
Yeah.
All right. So what we have here is a man who was found dead from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. And unless we've got some history of depression, a marital problem, and other things we can dig into, TMZ is leading us down this road that there was something wrong with his finances. I don't see anything in their reporting that indicates there was something wrong with his finances. I'm extrapolating. You dig?
What's that mean, extrapolate?
Something with a strap?
No, it ain't nothing with a strap. What I'm doing is I'm drawing conclusions based upon the information I've got here. The guy killed himself, and they're making a big deal out of the fact that he had misrepresented himself, and I'm wondering if people, nervous because of the Ponzi scheme stuff that had been coming down over the last few years, began to withdraw their monies from his accounts and funds, and that was something that he saw as a problem, and he wound up killing himself. That's what I'm thinking.
See, I think that's really intelligent, Mr. Henry. That's why you want to work for you and everything, on account of the stuff that you say is really good.
She indicates that she had been rear-ended.
All right. So we'll be back with more of this scintillating stuff in a moment. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. Don't forget our website, philhenryshow.com. Go to our merchandise shop. If you're watching us on Phil TV and HD, what are you looking at?
It's a new baseball cap.
It's the new Phil Henry ball cap, baby. That's what you're looking at. And these are going to be in the store in a few minutes, or in a few days, or in 24 hours, or in two. I don't know. They'll be in the store soon. So pick one up. We'll be back. Phil Henry Show.
Radio for Patriots. Hi, Patriots. It's the Phil Henry Show.
Are you gay?
Radio. For Patriots, by Patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. So, just to wrap up there with that gentleman, I don't know that anything was wrong with what he did financially. I don't even know that what I just laid out to you is the scenario. I'm having to take a wild guess because I don't believe that there's any reporting that's done these days, any kind of reporting that's done these days that is real reporting. These guys want to keep their jobs so bad as reporters that they go ahead and they throw commentary into it. You know, if you wanted your own talk show, then go out and get a talk show. If you want your own TV show, go out and get a TV show. I'm sorry that you chose writing for a career. You don't get to just put your opinion into things and have it respected. If you're a reporter, then you're a reporter. It's like these guys in the newspaper business. One day they woke up and they realized that newspaper columnists don't mean anything anymore to people. No one gives a damn. No one cares. No one reads your stupid column anymore. You want to know why? Because people have gotten so dumb, they can't read anymore. You know who's taken the place of the columnist? Is the talk show host on the radio. I'm not saying that's good. I'm saying that's the facts, Jack.
That's the facts, Jack.
Thank you, bud. God. I'm saying people would rather listen to...
effing retarded.
And then read your column. So... sue me. I didn't make this world. So what do those guys do? I want to get on the radio. I want to get a radio show. I want to do this. I want to do that. And I remember one day I just sort of dissed these guys that were on the air. I think they were on Fox Sports. I don't know who it was. One of them was a former UCLA athlete, and another was some jive ass who wrote a column for some newspaper. And I told them both to go get me coffee, and they laughed, but they were offended.
Yeah, what'd they do?
Well, they probably thought that I was a slob and an ass. They didn't want to know me anymore. Well, that's tough, you know. I ain't going to... why should I treat you like a broadcast? You didn't put in time. You didn't put any time in my business. You're a guy that was playing on a football field, and you, what were you doing? You were writing a column in a newspaper. Well, I'm sorry, you guys chose the wrong careers. Now you're in the broadcasting business. You want me to sit here and kiss your ass like you're my equal? You're not even close! You were playing football! Let me explain something to you. I'll put on the pads and I'll go out and I'll play football. What are you going to think of that? You'll laugh your ass off. Well, that's the exact same thing I do with you. Okay? And you were a newspaper writer. Now you're going to get on the radio and do what? Now, I understand that a lot of those people are very, very successful. They're successful for a number of reasons. But if you think that Phil Hendry, just this guy here, is ever going to consider them any kind of a broadcaster, you forget it. It isn't going to happen in a million years. Go out and pay your dues like I did, like everybody else in this business did. Then you come to me and tell me that you do a show. I had a guy tell me one time, he says,
have you ever syndicated radio before?
I said, have you ever done a radio show?
Yes.
I said, breathing hot air onto a microphone is not doing a radio show, okay? Don't give me that bull crap. I probably know more about syndicating radio shows than you do about doing one. How do you feel about them apples, huh? I bet you that'll have you babbling...
Jing chong ling long ting tong.
Well into the night, man.
That's racist.
That ain't racist. Okay, Libyan rebels set deadline for loyalist surrender emboldened by their military advances and increasing acceptance abroad. Libya's rebels gave Colonel Muammar Gaddafi's recalcitrant loyalists...
what's that mean?
Recalcitrant means disobedient or reluctant. Gave Muammar al-Gaddafi's recalcitrant loyalists a four-day deadline Tuesday to surrender, and they demanded that Algeria repatriate a clutch of Gaddafi family members, including his biological daughter and her own newborn daughter, who had fled into exile before the whole thing. Why do you want the daughter back? Let the kids go, huh?
Then they probably had something to do with a war crime.
His daughter and his granddaughter?
Yeah.
That's bullcrap. Although, so far, I think these rebels have been making the right decisions, so I can't fault them. In fact, here's one of the rebels now. How you guys doing?
Jing chong ling long ting tong.
Out of sight, baby, out of sight. We'll see you guys tonight, because this is already tomorrow. Don't forget our website, philhenryshow.com, for all your Phil Hendry Show needs, including our beautiful ball cap, which ought to be in the merchandise shop any day now. Okay? And we're on Twitter, twitter.com/RealPhilHenry. Until then, I'm Phil Hendry, and God bless, and, you know, lock it out any way you want to, man. Yeah, this is our new lockout right here.
Ching chong ling long ting tong.
And then we'll follow it up with...
effing retarded.
There you go.
Phil Hendry.